Church and enjoy your time there. I also have to make the quick announcement that you saw there were Charleston shoes if you were here last week. I used that as my opener. That's what we officially call these, attention getters. Thank you, Denise, for doing that. I brought some as well, so we have a plethora. And it always feels like a good thing when you get to use the word plethora. Well, I'm going to try something new here and come out here a little bit. We'll see how it works. If you think of car commercials, right, they always have the music and the beautiful scenery and then these cars going and then they'll show the leather interior and the bells and whistles. And do you ever read the fine print on them? Right, the stuff that goes quickly at the bottom. I watched three different commercials yesterday to make sure I'm right on this, and they always have some kind of phrase in there that, like, they're basically showing you the top of the line model, right? It's options shown is the quickest way they'll do it. But the idea of going, we are going to try to entice you to this car, but then you're going to go and it's going to be five times what you think because the more expensive version, you know, the really souped up version we're showing you, is. Pretty crazy. I, in light of that, looked. I was like, well, how many things are there? I drive a Corolla, right? So I looked up, and did you know that there is the Corolla L, and then the Corolla LE? But then you can not only get that, you can get the hybrid LE. And so I knew there were others, but did you know then the next step up is the Corolla SE? Then you can step up from that and get the Corolla Nightshade Edition SE or the SE Apex Edition. Well, options shown, right? Well, then beyond that, there's the Corolla XLE. That's the one I knew about. But like that I thought was the Cadillac of the Corollas. But I was wrong because then above that is the XSE for a Corolla. And above that is the Corolla XSE Apex Edition. Yeah, is that not crazy? Options shown. There are that many upgrades and options that you can do. But I had this thought as I was looking at it. What version of the Christian life does Jesus make available to human beings? Or maybe the other way to ask that is, what level am I settling for in the Christian life? Because we just finished Easter. As a church, well, I mean, we're in Easter. We just finished Lent and went into Easter, where we celebrate the resurrection life of Jesus. We celebrate the newness of what he's bringing. And I don't know about you, but it's easy to think about the LE version, and like, that's pretty good of the Christian life, when Jesus is inviting us into the XSE Apex Edition version of resurrection life. And there's a lot of ways to answer that question in terms of thinking, what might it look like? How might I be settling for the LE version? But for our Easter seasons, we started last year, and then we have been talking about wanting to do this, and I just couldn't find a plan, a good plan, but to be thinking about the fact that part of this abundant life that he invites us into is a life that is present with those outside the church. An outward facingness that is a huge part of experiencing the XSE Apex Edition version of the life that he offers. That resurrection life is available to us, it is available to our neighbors, and that it is experienced in its fullness when we are actually moving forward, loving, and present in our community. So last year, for those of you that were with us, I have a number of props today, I think. You know, we did the Godspeed series. Many of us hear that and go, oh yeah, we did a kind of concerted effort. Some of you weren't here, and that's okay. What is it? Well, it was an 8-part video series that I've alluded to. We allude to a number of times in this church. I love that the introduction just summarized it this way. It invited us to walk around our communities because Jesus walked. His speed was really slow. And then it summarized it as, to live at God's speed means to be present to where we are and present to who surrounds us. So we had talked about identity and pace and understanding our place and being present there. These are just different discussions we had. Being God's children, sort of putting down roots and being knowing people as we live on mission. That's where this went. And we had talked as elders, but then as the mission team, and thinking we want to just kind of revisit those here in the Easter season. And I looked all over. I was trying to find another thing, and there's just not, I literally said to Lori yesterday, we should have just redone Godspeed. But I've been reading, and I'm just going to wave some things here. So in light of trying to find it, at first I thought Everyday Church might be what we do. This is a book written by, why is it that book came out of Scotland, this one comes out of England, as people think about how does the church live outward. This book from Westminster Theological Seminary professor who was a missionary in France, that again, missionaries coming back going, American church, you need to think some things through, we think, just as you think about where life is found in the outwardness. This is one from a Covenant Seminary. He's retired now, Heart of Evangelism. He's also was a missionary. And then a not quite as new, but I'm hoping to get through Evangelism as Exiles, as we just think about what is this place and our presence, and could it be that life is found more fully by asking questions and communicating with one another, praying for one another, and thinking about these things? So I don't have it well thought out. I just made eye contact with Dave, joked a few weeks ago when I was wrestling with what are we going to do, and I said, maybe we'll just call it Todd Speed, because they're just some thoughts I have. But here's where we're going. As I've thought about things, this passage in Luke 10, we're going to do an old Puritan version of it. And that is, if you read, for example, Jonathan Edwards and his Charities and Its Fruits, he took 1 Corinthians 13, and I have a book this thick from 1 Corinthians 13. I mean, he like went word at times, phrase at times, a springboard off of that passage at times. And that's what we're going to do for the next few weeks in our Easter season as we think about this. And so we come to our first one. Here's where we're going today. So that was our long setup for where we're going. We're revisiting Godspeed. That's why I crossed out what I had and we hand wrote it, thanks to those who helped. Because as I worked on this, finally after Presbytery was over yesterday, I was like, this is what I wanted the title to be. So we're going to revisit Godspeed. It's okay if you weren't here for that series. We're going to pull some of those threads, but have some others. So where we're going today, though, is just who Christians are, how Christians respond, and what it means. Who Christians are, how Christians respond, and what it means. Look at your passage again. I got to find there. But what you see, I want you to simply underline these words. In verse 10, after the Lord appointed 72 others, that don't underline that, and sent them. You saw the title of the sermon, sent? Underline that. Then at the end of verse 2, you're praying and to do what? To send, underline send. Then how does verse 3 start? A very different word with a very similar idea. Go. For why? I am underlining the next one, sending. And then even in the centering, I was struck by sort of just considering the words at verse 5, when you enter a house. And then verse 7, stay, underline stay. You see again when in 8, when you enter, underline enter, and then you see it again in 10, but when you enter. And my point is simply this. There is a moving out that is part of simply being a Christian, a not staying put, an entering in, an initiating. You might even say it's a little bit violent maybe, but penetrating, but one of where that to be a part of the band of disciples is to be someone like this. Now, this is why this passage jumped out to me, because if you know Luke, what is happening here in chapter 10? Well, in chapter 9, it starts, how does it start? Jesus sent out the 12. But what happens here? He sends out 72 others. And that's really important. Because what happens is Luke has laid out that in the middle of chapter 9, there's this hinge. So you've been seeing Jesus do ministry and all that kind of stuff. And then it says in chapter 9, I think it's 51, he resolutely set out for Jerusalem. And he starts saying, like, here's the kind of Messiah I am. I'm one that's going to suffer and die. But in there, he's building a band of disciples. So the story right in front of this is about three people who come and say, hey, we're going to follow you. And if you have your Bible, it gives it the title in our non-inspired summary sentences that says the cost of discipleship. So that Michael Wilcox talked about this section of Luke here for the next few chapters, and where this story fits is it's about the way of discipleship. My point is that it's about y'all and me the others. Look at verse 1. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others. Not the special Green Beret apostles, but the normals. As a matter of fact, Daryl Bach in his seminary says this word others. Others refers to a group outside the apostolic band, and what is significant is that Jesus expands the ministry beyond the 12. Ministry to outsiders is not confined to a select few. As we think about who we are as disciples of Jesus in the life he invites us into, that we are sent ones, moved out, infiltrating space. We don't stay, but we go. We are present among wolves, right? This would say. We're people who initiate. And so I know it's Captain Obvious to say this, but I just was thinking of different analogies. And I was thinking of the word that gets you sent for so many sports analogies, right? Like I think when you lead off from first base, you what? Send the runner. And that's just a phrase you'll use. We're going to send the runner. And so you got all your signs and the steel sign comes up and you take off from first base and we're sending the runner. So obvious, but you're not staying put, right? There's just a trajectory. Or you're going to send a through ball to your striker, right? Okay, coach. The ball's still here. There's just an obvious trajectory of movement into the area out of your... This was one of the phrases I learned this week. The lamb jug. Does anybody know what the lamb jug is? I didn't. The lamb jug is another word for a sheep pen, a lamb pen, right? And how God's people are people that are sent from into that. Again, you see why I said it's Captain Obvious? Because we go, well, yeah. And most of you that have done this go, yeah. But we start thinking about how much of my identity is that? How much is this part of the full life of Jesus? You do remember, and for those that were with us in doing the Godspeed series, Matt Canlis, the pastor that kind of talked through things and interviewed the people that we had, he talked about his first day. He had gone to St. Andrews to study, but they needed pounds, as he said it. They needed money. And so he applied to be a parish assistant. And he went to the church. We watched the video. I'll send it out again. He went to St. Leonard's, is what his church was. He showed up. And I'll just read because I wrote down what he had said. He said, the first day on the job, I walked in and said, where's my office? And Reverend McDonald said, your office? And I'd never noticed this. And he said, as a great American, oh, yeah, you're right, because he was trying to be humble and his proud American. No, I mean your office. And Reverend McDonald, he said, I didn't notice this, said, my office? And as a pastor, I went, doesn't he have an office? He needs to write a sermon. But his point was, what did he say? If you remember, he looked at Matt and he said, start walking into the town. Talk to the people. Be present out there. That is our office, is what he was insinuating, right? This sentness that is part of the identity. And it struck me when I look, if you go back and watch the video when I send it out, this church was founded in the 12th century. They have that on there. And I thought, wow, isn't it something that as their acorn has grown and developed, that's where they find themselves so many centuries later. I've just been asking these questions, like, Lord, show me where that needs to work its way more into my DNA. So, again, Captain Obvious on the first one, who are Christians? We are sent to be present in a place, and that place is not in the lamb jug. We're going to talk about that. There's a place for the lamb jug. So I'm not saying that, but in what ways do I see myself at a root being sent? Second, so that's who Christians are. How do Christians respond? There's a lot of ways to respond on this. There's a lot of things that could be said, but the thing I'm going to mostly go, and forgive me if it's too negative, but is when you look at verse 3, go, I'm sending you out as lambs among wolves. I just go, really? It's hard. And so I know there's, you know, I was a campus crusader, as you know, and which means there are a certain type of folk who like put the knife in their mouth and they drop into the battle and they go, yeah, we're sent. But I don't know about you, but now that I'm mid-50s, because I'm not sure what I am, 55, 56, I'm like, that sounds exhausting. That's hard. I've done that all my life. And I think Jesus is giving, isn't it great that he mentions this as he's sending them, as he's giving them instructions? He's letting them know, this is hard. Don't expect this to be easy, because if I'm honest, I do. And he says then in verse 10, what's verse 10 say? That when you go in, there's going to be places where they don't welcome you. I don't know about you, but I like being welcomed. I like people lighting up when I walk in the bar even. Hey! They have this weird thing at Star Hill that they'll clap when some of their friends come in. They have yet to clap for me. So maybe one day, I know I'm in when that happens. But then even think about the hardness, the difficulty of this, and the fact in verse 10, I was thinking in verse 10 where it says, you know, but when you enter a town and are not welcomed, go into the streets and say, even the dust of your town, wipe your dust off your feet, that kind of stuff. And I thought, that sounds easy. That sounds black and white. Like if I was living in places of India or places in the Middle East where it's like, it's where I'm getting persecuted, that's easy. What do I do when I show up with people here in America and they welcome me, but they're just like, oh, that's like, oh, we appreciate your message, but yeah, that's for you, not for me. We live in this relativistic, weird place that applies to this, but is so different. And so now we're in this place of discernment, of figuring out winsomeness. What does it mean for us? And I'm like, Lord, the job just got harder in 2025 America of relativistic thinking. This is hard. It's hard work to figure out how to be someone sent into this kind of situation. And so I appreciate that the Lord gives us an opportunity to admit, hey, this is hard. Because that leads me to have to go like, okay, Lord, in this, where are the places that I want to cocoon? That's a phrase that gets used in a lot of books on being present in our non-Christian culture. I want to stay in the jug. That I get to be honest about, you know, that items at rest remain at rest. That I have an inertia problem. And, you know, one of the things as I was journaling and praying, because these are things I'm wrestling with. I'm going to share a story in a second. But that that it's easy for me to be proximate without being present. Do you know what I mean? To be in the neighborhood, but to not really engage or know, be in the wherever. And what does it mean to learn to be present as Jesus is, we're in talking about, is this really life, is the question I'm asking myself. And here's in the hard thing. I remember in seminary, we had a class and one of our professors was teaching us on stuff. And he goes, guys, you don't understand. I'm a seminary professor. I then get asked to preach on Sunday at various churches. I then get, he had this global anyway, it's service global churches and this whole resourcing thing. He's like, I travel and I work with Christians. He's like, all my friends are Christians. So do you know what I have to do? I had to go into Lowe's, and even though I needed five things, I made it five different trips. And I built a relationship with a few different guys at Lowe's. And in there, my wife came in with me and we hit it off with one and we got to talking and we would spend a lot of time talking to him. And we invited he and his wife over for dinner. And now we're talking about the gospel. He's like, I had to do that much work to get one conversation with someone who is not yet a believer in Jesus. And I remember sitting there thinking, I was a campus crusader. Hey, we got tools to do this. And we go in, that's crazy. Now as a pastor, I go, I absolutely get what he means. Because it is easy to be in the jug. Do you know I had five pastors yesterday at Presbytery say, hey, let's get lunch. I could fill all my lunches with Christian people. Right? This is hard work. Even if I'm proximate in my job, which I know many of you are, what's it mean to be present? We ask and wonder. Because is it the beautiful life? Pastor John Murphy tells the story about when he took a bunch of students up a hike, and he was a hiker and he loved it, not realizing it was pretty steep though. One sort of non-hiker named Linda was with the student group complaining all the way, and she started lagging behind, and everybody was trying to encourage her, but she complained more, and she started whining even. "It's too steep, it's too long, it's too hard," he writes, until they finally reached the plateau and sat down for lunch, and they could see her. They always kept her in sight, of course, but she still was a curmudgeon and just coming up, and one of the students yelled, "Linda!" And she didn't hear, she just was still grumbling, "Linda!" Still walking up, huffing and puffing. "Linda!" they all shouted. And then when she finally got their attention, this one student yelled, "Look to your left!" And he says that literally, Linda said, "Oh my." And even though she was huffing and puffing when she got up there, she said, "You need to bring more people up here." Because what she's seeing, the beauty. And this is where I'm like going, okay, the resurrected Jesus, who, think about the word send and him, John 3:16. "God so loved the world, he sent his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish." God did, 17, God didn't send, same word used here, him into the world to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved. Or think about 1 John 4:9. "This is how God showed his own love among us, that he sent his one and only Son into the world. And this is love, not that God not that we loved God, but that God loved us and sent," same word. Jesus is not causing his people to do anything he didn't do. He actually is saying, "Will you step more fully into union with me, where full life, apex version life is? Be sent people." Or Galatians 4, "When the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son." Right? What does it mean for me to be Linda and to be going, there is a beautiful Jesus who was sent for me? Of course I want to learn to grow, to be an apex version sent person. That's what he invites us to, because could it be that's where life is? And let me say it clearly, it is. It is. Because that's where Jesus' life is found. It's what we just heard Jesus' life is. So, who Christians are, how Christians respond, and then what it means. There's a number of things we could go here. I just simply think of a few things that this passage had me thinking on. And that is, again, this word enter in verse 5 and verse 8 and verse 10. What does it mean to enter and to be present? To know how to, if I'm going to make a call on whether I shake my dust off or not, right? There has to be some kind of intimate knowledge here in those things. And so what I was wrestling or thinking through is, again, I'm always thinking through now as a pastor, my old kind of philosophy of ministry as a campus crusader. And one of the things I'm still trying to unlearn is my sortie mentality, S-O-R-T-I-E. So we have Air Force people that are here. What's a sortie? I first heard this from a professor at Trinity Evangelical Da Vinci School who trained us as staff and he said, "The problem with you guys is that you fly sorties." And I was like, "What do you mean?" "We just had the Gulf War." And he was like, "Think about the Gulf War. How did we win it, or at least parts of it? We take our Air Force guys, we go fly over, we drop our bombs, we soften the ground, and then we fly back to our base that is well protected." He's like, "That has been our model of reaching those outside the church for millennia, okay, for decades, at least in the American church." He's like, he was challenging us, what does it mean to have relationships, to actually know the longings, the fears, the struggles with the folks who don't yet believe, and to sit with them and hear them, because that's where we apply the gospel. And I go, that's hard. Sorties are actually a lot easier, and they're safer, aren't they? They're just safer. And so I want to keep, this week I was just praying, Lord, I want to develop deeper friendships with those who are not yet following Christ. This is not a passive-aggressive thing, but I did run across this week in my reading. Do you know what the Dura Europos is? I didn't until this week. It is the first known set-aside building as a church that we know was just designated as a church. It was originally a house, but because of what we know about the inscriptions of that, it became only a church building. Do you know when it was? 233 AD to 256 AD, somewhere in there. And I thought, the church did well for 233, or let's say 200 years, without a church building. Now again, I think that's not our setting, that's not our, I know people, you know, we continue to go like, wouldn't it be nice to have a space? I get that, I'm not saying it's bad to have spaces, but I just thought, isn't that interesting that for 200 years, the church was flourishing and growing without a church building? Why? Because they were sent. So Michael Green, a British apologist and theologian, writes, the explosive growth of the early church was in reality accomplished by means of informal missionaries, that is, Christian lay people, not trained preachers and evangelists, carried on the mission of the church, not through formal preaching, but informal conversation in homes, wine shops, on walks, and around market stalls. They did it naturally and enthusiastically, which is partly why this book, as I was reading it, they called it Everyday Church. Because they were just like, this, it's the everyday church. It's not things. Which leads kind of to the second point, is I was thinking this week on how in my, this is hard. I really just want the Old Testament model. That's the, this is the second kind of implication. The first was just that my sortie, flying sorties mentality, but the Old Testament model of church. And that is, you saw in our Old Testament reading that one of you two read. I've mixed up who read what. Go proclaim to the nations, right? Did you know that is really, at least as far as I could find in my quick search, the only place that has like a going, sending thing? Because what was true of Old Testament Israel? They were to be a light on a hill. They were supposed to have people flock to them. There's these ideas of streams coming into them. But what happens in the New Testament? It gets turned on its head. And so Jesus says, go. Here he says, I send you. He says, go out. It's like, it's the whole difference between centripetal and centripetal thing of sucking people in. That's the Old Testament model. Throwing things out is the New Testament model. And I, and this is hard, just want the Old Testament model. We open our doors. Why are they not coming in? We have an event. Why are they not coming in? And so these guys that I've been reading are like, because we have an Old Testament model. It's the, I'll quote from Everyday Church. This is as we end towards, get towards ending, is written because they're giving stats. They're going like, listen to this stat. In England, and this was written years ago before COVID and before our more mass exodus coming out of COVID with all our cultural stuff, that before COVID, 96% of the children in the UK are growing up with no exposure to the church. And so they're like, but we're a sent people. We got to do church differently then. And he said, in America, we're really different. We're unique. So many people claim to be Christian, which is not true there. So it's hard to one-on-one. It could be apples and oranges, but he pointed out that according to stats when this was written, 85 million people in America said they don't plan on ever going back to church. And at the time, that was 27% of America. So if I want to just say, come through those doors, I'm leaving out almost a third of my neighbors. Wow. I read that and went, oops. You know? And so they say this, we want to suggest that most of our current dominant models of church and evangelism need to change. Why? Because we regard people as innately Christian in orientation. We think we can reach them through church meetings. And one of the common assumptions we have is that when people fail to turn up to church, that the assumption we have is that we need to improve the experience of church gatherings. We need to improve the product, quote unquote. We need better music, more relevant sermons, multimedia presentations, or engaging dramas. Or we need to relocate to pubs, cafes, or art centers. We need cool venues with cool people and cool music. The problem with this approach is the assumption that people will come to church if the product is better. To repeat what we've written previously, 85 million Americans have no intention of attending a church service, and these figures are higher among young people. So they conclude, merely opening our doors each Sunday is no longer sufficient. Offering a good product is not enough. Now again, I am not saying let's not offer a good product, but it's this is getting at this idea of going like, oh, how does the church become leaven in the place? Again, Laura's, some of you have heard from Laura, this podcast she's listening to about atheists coming to faith in England, and every single story, some of them are miraculous, believe it or not. But every one is not an event, not a church worship service, but a conversation with someone who sat with them and got to know them and heard their fears. And it's just hard and it takes time. But I kept thinking, Lord, is that the XLE or AX, whatever, apex version of life that you want to invite me into and us into as a church? Because I think it is. We're sent not to be guilty about it, not to get a knife in our teeth about it, but to step into life with Jesus and do what we can at being present where he's placed us. Let's pray. Lord, as we come as your people, we need you, but we want your life. And so, Father, we're not going to be the Green Berets of this, but we can be present for a neighbor, coworker, someone we meet this week. Would we be doing that in a way that enhances our life with you, Lord, more and more, for your glory's sake? And all God's people saying, amen, 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 amen. Let's stand and prepare for the table.